This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. For years now, the Women's Aid Organization has been helping women in crisis situations who are suffering from either mental, physical, and sexual abuse, or all of the above. Also open to volunteers joining in their activities, the WAO is set to launch a program to train volunteers to provide frontline support to women in crisis. I find out more about this from Charlene Murray. She is a WAO case manager, and Amnani Fatin Abdul Kadir, who is a crisis support officer. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Hi.
Good. Great.
Thank you so much for joining me. So, you know, all of us have this great want or need, I mean, most of us anyway, to be volunteers. Mm-hmm. So how did the both of you actually, you know, first become interested in social work? And I mean, for you, Charlene, it is a career. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
Well, it happened 10 years ago. And wow. It's really by chance. Just like any fresh graduate, when I came out, told myself I'm going to work for a big corporate company, be in that high power pantsuit and such. And I found myself in a job which worked primarily with domestic violence survivors, or at that time we used to call it gender-based violence survivors, who were refugees. And I went in without knowing anything actually about it. Mm-hmm. And when I think it was really an eye-opening experience to me that there's really so much out there that we don't know about, and that our skills could really be put to use. Mm-hmm. And so 10 years has passed, and I've been in the same line in different capacities. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into it.
And how long have you been with the WAO?
I've been with WAO for 1 year plus. Mm-hmm. I'm still pretty new to WAO, but I have been working with WAO in different capacities previously.
Previously as well. Also as a volunteer, I'm guessing.
As a volunteer from different organizations, but partnering with WAO. So I'm quite familiar with the work that they do.
Okay. And Nani, you also are a volunteer. You're not part of the staff, if I'm correct, but you have been volunteering since 2015, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, correct. So my experience was more of, I was scrolling through Facebook, it was beginning of the year, and then I thought like, oh, para-counseling training for Women's Aid Organization, let's do something to kick off the year. So 2015, and went for the training, and three years later.
And I mean, was that something that you had ever even attempted before? You know, was that kind of like, did you ever take like counseling sort of courses or anything
no,
like that?
No, not at all. It was just more of, okay, this is interesting, something new, and I wanted to give back to the community mm-hmm. in some way or form. So I thought like going for a training first just to see what it was all about. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with it.
Okay, it's interesting that you fell in love with it, because it's not an easy task. And so that's something also I want to talk about. What is a crisis support officer? You know, what sort of role do you play?
Okay, so the crisis support officers, we're all volunteers. We have our own, you know, everyday jobs. We're everyday women. We're homemakers. We're students. We work in the private sector. But I think we all share the same common theme, where we want to give back to the community, mm-hmm. and we want to give our time. So the crisis support officers are the first liners. They're actually the women who handle the Women's Aid Hotline crisis calls. So that's who we are.
Mm-hmm. So this is the TINA hotline?
No, this is our hotline, our okay. main number hotline.
Okay.
But also in WAO's mm-hmm. In WAO's perspective, what the crisis support officers really mean to us. Like what Nani said, they are really the frontiers and the first tier mm-hmm. that are the ones that pick up the phone call when a woman in crisis calls to seek some kind of assistance. Sure. And that is especially important for us because that is really the majority of the ways that we get our clients. Mm-hmm. And that is really how the majority of clients that who have sought help from WAO have reached out to us through. Mm-hmm. So we have other forms of referrals through hospitals, through enforcement agencies, through concerned individuals or other NGOs. But most of them actually pick up the phone, call the hotline, and therefore it's a very important function. Although the crisis support officers are not staff per se, mm-hmm. but without them, it would definitely be detrimental to WAO. They really are the foundation of our work.
Because I imagine the women who are calling, obviously they have been through hell, and so they need somebody who understands, who's comforting, you know. And I mean, what is generally, you know, as a volunteer, what is generally your first response when you get that phone call?
I think the first thing is, whenever someone calls in, it's more like to assess the urgency and of the situation. Mm-hmm. Is she in a safe place? What is the story behind the call?
Right.
You know, sometimes we get calls inquiring about a friend, inquiring about, you know, their neighbor, their sister, when in fact it's actually about themselves.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So, I think in my experience, it's always first call, answer, just to assess, is she all right? Is she safe?
Mm-hmm. And what sort of questions do you ask? Because I think it's a brave thing already just to make that phone call, right? And, you know, maybe anyone who's listening who's even afraid to make that phone call, maybe it would help if they kind of knew what sort of things you would ask so that they don't feel so afraid.
Firstly, you know, getting them to know who we are, mm-hmm. and that it's private, it's confidential. That's the second thing that's also important. And creating that rapport where they feel comfortable enough to share what's really going on with them. Some of the callers are pretty straightforward. Okay, this is what's happening. I'm being abused. I need to know what are my options, how, the steps. But there are some women who do call in that just needs support. Mm-hmm. They just want someone to listen to the struggle that they're going through because they feel so alone and isolated. So the questions that I would ask would be, are you okay? How do you feel right now? And are you safe? Are you in a safe place?
And say that they do tell you that they're not in a safe place. So they are in, you know, their life is in danger, or maybe their children's lives are in danger as well. What is your next sort of response from there?
Okay, so WAO's mandate is to empower our callers to make their own decisions, because they're usually caught in the cycle of abuse where their power is taken away from them, mm-hmm. meaning that they're being controlled by their husband or their, you know, their father or their boss or whoever it is. So it's important for us to assert and to encourage them to make their own choices, whatever that's best for their current situation. Mm-hmm. So, that's basically it. We provide options for them. Mm-hmm. And then from there, they decide, would this be the right step for them? Because sometimes we can always just say, hey, you know what? Leave your husband. Mm-hmm. This is the best option for you. He's abusive, leave him. But if she's got three children, she's a homemaker, she doesn't have any financial support, that is not the best option for her. She needs to plan a safe route to get out of that situation. So we provide options for her through legal advice, and other means as well, mm-hmm. even refuge.
So what we really focus on every single call that we receive, and especially those who outrightly tell us that they are in a cycle of violence and they are in a moment of crisis, is we plan a safety plan for them. Mm-hmm. So we walk them through where the threats are, when they think the next threat would happen, and we talk them through getting themselves and their children to a safe place. We work them through options of going through their friends, their family, and of course, most importantly, explain to them what WAO can do in that situation for them. I guess one thing I also wanted to add is that in all of this, we always remain non-judgmental, and the way we build rapport and empower them through allowing themselves to make their own decision is so important, because it also gives them a sense of, you know, if I don't do according to what she has advised me to, I can still come back to her for help. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially the message that we're trying to get across to every individual, that the choice is yours. We are here to support you and to guide you. And it doesn't matter if you decide that today is not the day you want to move out of that abusive situation. But we are here. Mm-hmm. And when you need us, when you need us to intervene, whatever, we will just be there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very helpful, isn't it, to know yes. that you have options, and I guess to just kind of do it at your own pace and do it at your own comfort levels.
Correct.
Yeah, and yeah. That non-judgmental thing also. Because, you know, if something bad did happen after they spoke mm-hmm. to you, you're not the type to go and say, yeah, well, you know, you should have listened to mm-hmm. us, right? Yeah.
Of course not.
I'm speaking today to Charlene Murray and Amnani Fatin Abdul Kadir. They're both with WAO, and Charlene is a case manager there, and Amnani is a crisis support officer. And we're finding out more about the WAO Hotline Crisis Intervention Program, which is going to kick off in a couple of weeks or so. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Charlene Murray. She is a case manager with WAO, and Amnani Fatin Abdul Kadir. She is a crisis support officer, also volunteering with the WAO. And we're discussing a couple of things. We're discussing, you know, how the WAO has a hotline crisis intervention program coming up, and also what a crisis support officer actually does and how, you know, we help women. So both of you have had experiences. Charlene, I mean, in mm-hmm. your case as a case manager, where do you come in all of this after the frontline support have kind of, you know, sorted things out for you?
Okay. So my job is really to ensure the due diligence of each individual case management is met by WAO standards. So we do have social workers, and I manage a team of social workers who take on individual cases and assist individuals and their families in seeking the redress mm-hmm. and attaining the support that they need, whether sure. from WAO or from external parties. And so where I come in is really to ensure that each case has been given the best form of support mm-hmm. that is needed. Each case has a right understanding of the kind of support that they could access, mm-hmm. As well as to be on board to assist the crisis support officers in terms of training, in terms of development of their skills, as well as the day-to-day operations of picking up, of handling the hotline itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And speaking to so many different women, and I'm mm-hmm. not sure if the cases sort of, if you're sort of seeing like a recurrent theme of sorts, mm-hmm. you know, about the calls or the issues that the women are facing. Is mm-hmm. there something like that?
I would say that if you look at WAO's statistics, and it can be found on our website, throughout the years, it's consistent that the women who call us are women who are experiencing domestic violence. So we're not saying that other forms of violence are not out there. It's just that the majority of women who do call us are survivors of domestic violence, and that's primarily the group of our target beneficiaries that we work along with. Mm-hmm. And the theme really is that it's not that domestic violence is more prevalent, but it's more of people are actually coming out with shows like this, with social media, with the availability of information and resources throughout the internet. People can understand, can read more on it, and are actually coming out to say that I am a survivor of domestic violence. So that avenue mm-hmm. for them to be able to seek redress is so important, which was why in 2015, we started the full-fledged, back then we called it the Para-Counselors Program, mm-hmm. Where we had individuals like Nani and many others who took on the roles to handle the hotline. Mm-hmm. And that was also because we wanted to get other women to be part of the program so that it's not just assisting the need of what WAO needs to do, but to also share the whole concept of the importance to talk about domestic violence in an open manner and to know that there is always help out there.
Yeah, because I think it's hard for anyone who hasn't experienced it to even begin to imagine it, right?
Correct,
yes. And if you're blessed to have never mm-hmm. to have never faced that, I mean, speaking from experience, you know, it's hard when you hear these stories also. It's just, you can't imagine humans being so cruel to people that they supposedly love, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, Nani, how do you kind of... I mean, you're hearing all these stories and you've been doing it for 3 years now. I imagine it doesn't get any easier.
You know, one thing that I realized, I mean, we get more calls now, of course. I feel that there's more self-awareness among women now, mm-hmm. You know, thanks to, you know, shows like yours and so on. So women want to come out and they want to talk about it and they're looking for support. And the women who actually call us, they're at that point where they're so desperate already.
Yeah.
You know, and they're willing to reach out to a stranger. I'm not saying that they don't get the support from their own families, but, you know, I think in Malaysia, culturally, we tend to just keep whatever happens behind closed doors,
Mm-hmm.
And then these women, of course, can't share with their parents, can't share with their siblings. You know, it's always the same, like, okay, you're married, so, you know, deal with it. This is your thing, you know. He probably doesn't mean it. You know, and that's always the recurring theme. It's always the same storyline, different characters, different locations, but same pain, same story. So, you know, as I go on with Women's Aid, it kind of course, in the beginning when I first started, I was very much, what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess I was in shock was one, but then I went into this depressed state where it's like, okay, so this is real life for women.
Mm-hmm. This is a reality.
Yeah,
right?
This is real, and it happens to every other person on the street. I mean, we always hear stories of someone who's abused, someone's sister, someone's mother, someone has had a story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think what Women's Aid does is so important to create that that support system, just so that in a way we can sort of catch those women, because these women who call in, they're so tired. You can hear it in their voice.
Mm-hmm.
They're so exhausted, although they mention things like, this is the first time he's done this. This is the first abuse. But to be honest, I mean, right, Charlene, usually it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
It's years before they realize that actually, oh, okay, actually I've been abused emotionally, verbally for 5 years, and only now it's become more violent.
Right.
Yeah.
So another trend that we have picked up on is, and this is through our statistics and the clients that we receive, is that no one really reports the first time after they've been abused, whether it's physically, whether it is emotionally, whether it's psychologically. And most of the time, individuals who have never experienced abuse, when they do experience abuse, they are in shock.
Sure.
Because they don't know how to process it and they can't even put a word to it. And it's really a very difficult thing and a very brave thing for a woman to say that, okay, I have been abused and I'm acknowledging that this act has been committed onto me. And so we acknowledge that part, and we know, like what Nani said earlier, you know, when they come to us, they are in a state of desperation because it has gone on for a period of time and they really don't know how else to deal with it. And so Women's Aid is, most of them call us not with the intention that, okay, you are going to solve my problem, but more of to scout the waters and see, you know, is there something that this stranger, this organization that's out there can do for us?
Mm-hmm.
And so in WAO, we focus a lot on psychosocial assistance. We focus a lot on assisting women in the process of seeking justice as well as the legal redress process, because it's not that straightforward.
Yeah.
Like what Nani mentioned earlier on, the cultural norm of keeping or not washing your dirty linen in public and keeping matters, family matters, behind closed doors doesn't just stretch out within the family unit of those who are experiencing domestic violence, but also the greater community.
Yeah.
And so it creates that barrier of anyone wanting to help another person or jumping up and saying that, you know, okay, you deserve help, I'm going to help you. And therefore, it makes it a very brave act for a woman to report or say it out that I have been abused.
And I guess, you know, just for anyone who is listening who might be in a similar mm-hmm. situation, once they've made that brave step, they've mm-hmm. actually called you and spoken to you, you know, mm-hmm. and they want to leave, how do you guys then kind of, you know, step in and assist them in that whole process of, you know, finding refuge in, you know, leaving that abusive environment?
Yeah. The majority of women who contact us, as I mentioned earlier on, would be through the hotline or through Tina. And Tina is our SMS WhatsApp service. And Tina is 24 hours a day where we have someone who is manning it. And so the moment they get through to us through these channels, what the crisis support officers do is they ask them the relevant questions, they work out a safety plan for them, but most importantly, they try to fix an appointment with them so that we could meet them face to face, and we, in the sense of the social workers at WAO from the services team. So when we do meet them face to face, that's when we explore their options. We explore what are the necessary steps that they could possibly take, and we work through that with them by ensuring that they understand that we will be there for them. And so what WAO does, the social workers do, is every nitty-gritty thing that has to do with case management. So they accompany them to police stations. They speak to police officers and liaise with investigating officers for them. They advocate to ensure that they can apply for interim protection orders, or now we have the emergency protection orders. They work through court cases with them. They work through custody disputes with them. And most importantly, if they do require a safe place, we offer shelter services to them. And while they are in the shelter, and even after they leave the shelter, the service of case management never really ends until someone else says, okay, I'm good, I think you can go now. So that's how we work through the cases.
So I guess some of this can go on for a very long time as well.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of investment, time investment, you know, personal investment going into this.
Yes.
And I guess that's very reassuring for women to know, you know, because making that step to just get out of it is one thing. But, you know, there's, as you've said, there's a whole long journey ahead of them, right?
Correct. And what I wanted to also add is that, so for women who are in the midst of, like in the moment of crisis where they have been beaten up really badly, they require medical services, etc. So we would straight away refer them to say that, okay, what you need to do now is to go to the nearest government hospital. Because the one-stop crisis center for domestic violence, rape and other forms of abuse is located only in government hospitals. And it's always located at the emergency unit. So all you need to do is to walk in and to say that I have been abused, and the staff would know what to do. But so we walk them through that process. We walk them through the process of, okay, do you want to go to the police station right now? Would you like to call the police to rescue you right now? And if they are not in the position to be able to do that, then Women's Aid Organization actually steps in to see how we can assist them with that.
So there is also, I suppose, an element of danger then? Because, I mean, if this is such a violent person that they're dealing with, there's also, you know, the possibility of violence being, you know, perpetrated against the caseworkers, against the social workers.
Which is why we always work through the hospitals or the police. And so Women's Aid Organization doesn't actually go to site to do the rescue itself, but we work along with the relevant enforcement agencies to execute that kind of response.
Okay. All right. And what about the emotional needs? You know, it's so much that they've taken on. You know, their mental health has obviously taken a beating as well, sometimes even longer than the physical abuse, right? How do you guys actually kind of, well, assist them in that sort of area?
Okay. So we are very in tune with the emotional needs of any survivor who approaches us, especially those who require shelter and live in our refuge. We acknowledge the fact that without an outlet for them to express their feelings and that anger and that disappointment and that sadness, it actually leads and manifests in many other different ways. For example, mothers with children. And I guess it happens to a lot of us as well, that when you can't show your anger upon the person that you are angry with, you tend to, you know, divert your anger and displace it on something else. And so we find that that is a very common thing among the survivors that we assist. So in Women's Aid Organization, if you are someone who require refuge services or shelter services. We definitely have counselors that come on board to run sessions with the women. Mm-hmm. And these are actual counselors, not just someone who's just coming on board and saying that, hey, I know how to talk to a woman in need. So we do have certified counselors. We do have clinical psychologists that volunteer with us or even assist us on a very small rate to ensure that these quality services are given to the women in the refuge. But just like all of our programs, everything is voluntary. So if in the course of living in the shelter, the woman says that, I don't want to go through counseling services anymore, we will respect her decision.
Okay. Yep. Okay. And going back to the whole mm-hmm. volunteer thing, so you are launching a program to train
yes.
volunteers, like Nani over here, mm-hmm. you know. So tell me about that. Who would make an ideal sort of volunteer?
Anyone. Anyone with the aim, the heart, the soul to reach out to others who might be experiencing a form, any form of violence, especially domestic violence. So it doesn't matter if you're a homemaker, if you are a student, if you are a retiree, if you are a working professional, if you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, it really doesn't matter. So the reason why we say it doesn't matter is because, our training is tailored in such a way where it's extensive. It goes through the whole WAO structure. It goes through in a very detailed form what it really takes to be a crisis support officer and what are the skills that you need. And we work through those skills with you. Mm-hmm. So we have external trainers that are coming on board to talk about the relevant areas that you would need to have knowledge on while being on the phone with a survivor. For example, the Domestic Violence Act, having basic knowledge on family laws, on Sharia laws, ensuring you know what actually the penal code constitutes of and how it relates to domestic violence and what are the acts that you need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. So all these are very important information because sometimes people call only once. And so you need to have those kind of information on hand. So what we're trying to say is that you don't need to have that prior experience because we will equip you with whatever you need to be an effective crisis support officer. Mm-hmm. But if you are someone out there who has always wanted to volunteer, who has always wanted to do some kind of work to help other women in crisis, who has always found that maybe there is that tiny lacking of meaning in what you are doing on a day-to-day basis and would like to do more to give back to the community, then this is the program for you. So this is the program for you to come and join us, be part of this crisis support officers family, be part of the WAO family and do something good and give back to society. So what does it take to be a crisis support officer? 9 hours a month? Of volunteering services, really not much. We do have 3 slots a day. So like I mentioned, it doesn't matter if you are a working individual and you only get off work at 7. We do open our office to extended hours from 7 to 10. So you could come on board and assist with that. If you are a student and you only have the mornings off, then you're welcome to come on board. We have a schedule that you can join. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, after the 3 days training session, we do have a series of practicums where an experienced crisis support officer like Nani and the others would mentor one-on-one.
Okay.
To prepare you before you actually take on your first call. So there's a whole series of listening to recordings and all. It's definitely something very fulfilling mm-hmm. for anyone who would like to be part of the greater good.
And Nani, before you joined, right, what sort of questions did you ask yourself? Because this is real life situations, right? So, I mean, if you could just walk us through what went through your mind, you know, what made you decide to stay and to continue doing it?
Okay. I admit, when I first started the training program, I was thinking, oh God, can I really handle this? It's heavy. And I'm someone from the content industry. I do PR. You know, it's a lot of, you know, fluff. It's different than this whole area of work. So, to be quite frank, it was a little scary at first, but then I had a great team behind me from Women's Aid who had guided me through it, where the importance of being there is just to listen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not even about physically being there for the women who call in, but just to listen actively and be present with them on the phone.
And not be judgmental as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the main part that we want to emphasize for this training is it is more, we've included an element of the individual so that you learn about yourself, you be more self-aware on how to be present and be effective as a crisis support officer for these women. Because in the first training, we didn't have that. Mm-hmm. Okay, on how to handle the call after. What happens to for me, for example, after I put down the call with an abuse victim, what goes through my thought processes?
Yeah.
And a lot of the times I would go home stressed and, you know, like, oh, is this the world? It's just full of cruelty. It's, you know, these women are going through such pain, like, I'm processing all this hate.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that go? So in this training, we actually focus on self-care, self-awareness, our own emotional processes, you know, our mm-hmm. experiences in the past, what triggers certain memories, mm-hmm. and also a very exciting element is the language of love. And I think, Charlene, you can go a little bit more into that. That's really important, and mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. So we've added this component for the participants of the upcoming training, which is called the language of love. And the language of love is really a very interesting and simple concept, but it's something that not many people think about. So it really talks about how everyone acknowledges love or sees love in a different way through different understanding of it.
Sure.
So, for example, I could seek love through validation, and you could seek love through gratification, and another person could seek love through tangible items that they can see. And understanding that because everyone sees love differently, it also helps us encourage crisis support officers to empathize further with survivors that call through. Because I think the common thing that I get from many crisis support officers is that sometimes I don't understand why they know this is wrong. Why can't they just walk out of it? They know that this is the best for their family. You know, why can't they move out of the situation? And in fact, a lot of other people, laymen who talk to me and know that, you know, I work in this field, mm-hmm. ask me the very same questions, but they don't want to leave the situation. But see, what they fail to understand is that their understanding or how they understand love or how they feel love is different from the next person next to them. Sure. So by understanding that concept, it gives us a greater sense of awareness that everyone is different.
Mm-hmm.
Each individual is unique. And for that, we shouldn't compromise the fact that they still need the help that we could offer.
Yeah, because it's very easy to dismiss somebody, right? Like, why did you stay? You know, you should have just left.
You should have known better.
This is your problem. Okay.
Yeah. Who asked you to let it go on for so long? So I suppose this is to kind of, help counter those sort of silly narratives that people have.
Okay. So that you're less judgmental, not judgmental.
Okay, all right. So if anyone's interested to become a crisis support officer and to join this training, how do they go about doing that?
So they can go to Women's Aid Organization's official Facebook page, and we have put up an ad there. There will be a Google form detailing the dates of the training, the venue, and the actual content of the training, aim, objectives, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So all they need to do is to fill up the Google form and submit it, and we will follow up with them by email. So we have also decided to impose a refundable commitment fee of 100 ringgit only, just to ensure that participants who come complete the training and the practicum. And at the end of the practicum, if any participants feel that, you know what, maybe this is not for me or I am not ready to embark this journey, it's fine. We will still be refunding that 100 ringgit. So essentially, the program is free.
Okay.
it's just more more of the commitment to ensure sure. that you have the full experience of the training and the practicum before you make a sound decision, mm-hmm. you know, on whether this is something for you. So we know that, you know, it might not be, you know, everyone's cup of tea, but there is really no harm trying and coming for the training. Another thing that I wanted to add is that for anyone who's interested, what we are looking for are individuals who are also looking at this program as a privilege to serve. We often find people saying like, oh, you know, I'm going to do this charity and that charity. And, you know, that's exactly the mindset that we're trying to steer clear of. That understanding that being in that position where you are able to make the difference in someone else's life, it's really a privilege. Mm-hmm. And it's not out of kindness, it's not out of, you know, I have the resources to do this, so I'm going to do this, but it's really a privilege to be part of another person's journey to recovery.
I'm sure you agree with that, Nani.
Yes, there's nothing like that feeling of knowing that you've made an impact mm-hmm. in someone's life just by listening, and you've changed their world or perspective in some way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no better feeling than that.
Okay. All right. So the dates again would be early May?
Yes. So our training commences on the 6th, mm-hmm. the 12th, and the 13th of May. Mm-hmm. More details are on the website. Okay. All 3 days are on weekends because we cater to women right. who are working in wherever, and also weekends will work the best for them. And the training venue will be in PJ. Again, it's on the website.
And there's a closing date for people to register?
Yes. Our closing date is on the 1st of May.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining me today.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you. So for more information on the training and also on everything that Women's Aid Organization does, do visit their website at wao.org.my, or you can even get updates from their Facebook page. If you know or are someone who is experiencing abuse, you can reach out to the WAO by calling their hotline at 03-7956-3488, or you can text Tina, T-I-N-A, at 018-988-8058. Tina, of course, stands for Think I Need Assistance. If you missed any part of this interview, or if you'd like to listen to previous episodes from this series, do search for the podcast on our BFM app, which you can download from Google Play and the App Store. I've been speaking to Charlene Murray and Amnani Fatin Abdul Kadir. They're both with the WAO. And this has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.